Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
After a season of erratic performances from October onwards, perhaps Manchester City have been showing a few signs of improvement this week, even if one of the two results wasn't ideal. Far from perfect in the defeat to Liverpool and the win at Spurs, but there were plenty of things to suggest that the roughest patch is over and the sunlit uplands are there on the horizon. We'll discuss both of those games on today's Blue Moon Podcast, plus we'll take a look ahead to this weekend's FA Cup tie with Plymouth, as Aaron Hocking joins us from the Argyle Life podcast to tell us all about the Championship side. Then later on in the show, we'll also hear from the former City striker Robert Taylor as he played a part in trying to stop City's promotion in 1999 when playing for Gillingham, and then he played a part in getting City back to the Premier League 12 months later. Lots to talk about, so let's get to it. I'm David Mooney. With me this week, I've got two City fans. We've got Chris Higginbottom.
Hello there, you all right?
Not too bad, thanks, Higgy. And Adam Mugg's back. Hi, Adam.
Hello. Good to be back.
Good to have you back. Place to start. Pep said after the Spurs game that Kucinov travelled without his wash bag. What's the furthest you've been from home without any luggage, or the longest you've gone without any supplies? Adam?
So mine was a night out. It's where I ended up, really, that was the issue. So it was Halloween 2017, and it was actually the day before Aguero broke City's goal-scoring record at Napoli away.
Oh, yes.
Don't know how I remember that. But, so I was 18 at the time. Are you aware of 42's nightclub in town?
Yes.
So, yeah, that's where I ended up that night. It was the last time I ever went there, never set foot in there again. They did an all-nighter event, which is where it shuts at 6 a.m, and it was a Halloween thing. And there was a few of us there, and I was very young, very immature. Drank a lot of drink, and I was dressed up as a zombie, I think, like very cheap makeup on, fake blood. Kind of ripped
shower
shirt.
Curtain, kind of flex.
That kind of thing. And anyway, me and my mate would never do this again. Got really drunk, and just there was some like discarded drinks on the side. A sip of them. Yeah. I don't remember anything afterwards. Anyway, apparently I went on a 192, which takes you back.
Do we need to call the police here, Adam?
Is that a euphemism?
I don't remember anything after this. Got on a 192 bus. Apparently gave the driver a free shot at beer keller token rather than a day rider. He'd have sausaged me to the back. All I know is I woke up at Bolton bus station at 8 a.m. and my phone was dead, so I had to go get it charged. And then my dad picked me up at about 10:30. And then later on that day, Aguero broke the goal scoring record. So that's the furthest I've been from home without any essentials. I could have done with at least a toothbrush or, like, you know, a Lucozade maybe something.
What state were you in when Aguero did break the record? Because all I'm thinking is that sounds like the hangover from hell.
It was the first time, I would say, because obviously you're quite robust when you're young, aren't you? And I was like 18. I could really sort of handle it. That was the first time it fully knocked me for six, and I was in a zombified state, let's say, for the next 24 hours. Literally and figuratively, because I was wearing the makeup as well. So
Of course, yeah. Literally a zombie, yeah. I don't know if you spotted this one, Higgy, but Gaz said in our WhatsApp group that Kucinov was raw dogging a shower.
Yeah, honestly, like, every WhatsApp group I'm in was just absolutely in awe of Kucinov, not only just his performance, but the way Pep was talking about him. I mean, there was comments about him making a fire in the corner of his hotel room, just eating carrion, and, you know, just, he's an absolute legend. I absolutely love him to bits. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah,
especially after that shaky little start that he had.
Yeah, let's get talking about him, because he's one of the green shoots for performances. Because I mean, let's start weirdly for this episode, Higgy, by taking the results out of this week, because I think the performances against Liverpool and Spurs kind of, when we're talking about City improving, you can kind of take a lot from them without even looking at the result, can't you? Because like it feels like City are, I'm not going to say closer to what they used to be because they're still quite a long way off that, but you can see the signs of progression from where they were before Christmas, can't you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the problems we had were blatantly obvious, even though, I mean, the problems we had were obvious and we were kind of bemoaning Pep for not doing different things, but he didn't really have any solutions up until recently, and he is addressing the obvious problems we have. You can see the way that the new players are going to slot in. We've got some nice problems to solve with the way that the existing wingers are playing as well. It's like the build-up play is looking really, really good, but the end product isn't there. And you know, these are problems that can be coached and can be solved, and the new players coming in will make
certainly help
possibilities
with all that.
Yeah. To pass round the issues that we currently have. Nico Gonzalez looks, you know, he looks the part. He looks like he can really play a part. There's times when the game starts to pass him by and he looks like he's a new player and not fully settled into his team, because fair do he is. But there's also times where he looks really assured and it's like, oh my God, we've got our swagger back here in midfield. We're controlling it in a way that we're used to seeing.
Yeah,
Marmoush looks useful. I don't think he's got a spearhead that Haaland is, but again, that's good because you
different,
don't want,
isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. You need a foil to different positions to work off each other. So it's all looking great. And Kushinov, I mean, yeah. The man, the animal, the legend.
Yeah. Adam, this is an interesting point as well, because it was put to Guardiola after the Liverpool game that was the joint youngest Premier League squad team that he'd named. And that's a quite a huge step, given that at the start of this season, this looked like one of the oldest City teams, and they looked like frail old men running, like trying to chase a ball around the pitch. And then suddenly, like out of nowhere, he's got the joint youngest average age under Guardiola.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been weird. I think the reason that is because this squad, if you look at it at the start of this season, we did have young players in there, the likes of Phil, Savinho, Rico Lewis.
Doc is still young as well.
Doku, of course, as well, yeah. But there was not very many players that were like the 25 to 28 or 9 range. We've either got like the OAPs or the kids. Like, it's just like the disparity is really, really large. So I think that when that gets addressed, like obviously the January transfer window happened, 4 players came in, all of a young age. He's starting 3 of them consistently now. You know, Nico, Kusanov, Marmoush. When they come in, and it's at the expense of 3 33-year-olds or 32-year-olds, etc., etc., it's going to bring it down massively. So yeah, it's the right direction that the club need to move into. But I do also think that moving forward, there's been talk of a mass exodus needed, etc., etc. I think we need a bigger squad and to sell fewer players than people are actually saying, because I think experience does actually count for a lot still when you're going for a Premier League title, which I think we will be doing next season. But it's good to see.
Yeah, definitely. And in terms of good versus bad in the performances, well, like I again, the results this week kind of reflect that, because you got a bad result to start with, good result to end with the Spurs win. But there's kind of like two sides to every coin this week, because Higgy, you can say, yeah, the attack looked a bit toothless against Liverpool, but they dominated possession and they dominated the play and they were able to dictate it against Liverpool in a way that they haven't been able to do in previous years. In previous games this season. Against Spurs, they had quicker attacks in the first half. They couldn't keep it in the second half and they couldn't do the whole control thing in the second half. But they looked a lot more dynamic in attack in the first half. You've got Savinho and Doku again. The end product was lacking a little bit against Liverpool, but they were much more dynamic against Spurs. Like there's kind of like good and bad all the way through this week.
Yeah. I mean, there are positives to take out of Liverpool. I don't buy into the possession and dictating the game viewpoint, because I don't think Liverpool really needed to get out of second gear. They were quite happy to set up against us with the ball, knowing that we weren't going to be that penetrative. I mean, Doku skinned Trent, as he's known.
Sorry, listeners, we're on video for this. You won't see the video, but the look on Higgy's face when he said that was the most disdainful I've ever seen him.
well, probably not. But it's just everyone's so familiar, aren't they, with the doyens. It just pisses me off. But, yeah, I mean, he obviously can do it, but Liverpool were content with that because there was a wall of four players every time he got past Arnold. And it was just never really happening, especially without Haaland in there. Liverpool knew that we didn't have much, and if we did step it up, I think they were definitely capable of moving it up a bit more. So giving us possession and making that stat look favourable. I mean, ultimately, you know, they could have had a couple more as well. But yeah, even in that game, even in the fact that we were, I mean, is outclassed too strong a word? They're obviously the better team, but even in that, there were really positive signs. Savinho, Doku, none of these players I can pronounce. Gonzalez looked good. You know, there were positive elements. Kucherov again was good. So yeah, it's like in terms of a transition and a rebuild, you can see that it's happening before your very eyes, but you can't expect it to just change overnight and be successful straight away. You know, hindsight's a wonderful thing, and yes, we should have started this kind of thing a year ago rather than sticking with a load of trusted stalwarts, one of whom, the most pivotal, ends up being out for the season. But yeah, we're doing it now. We've won four in a row. Let's all calm down. It's looking okay.
Yeah. They managed to create a lot of Spurs as well, Adam. And Guardiola said afterwards that the reason it got a bit nervy towards the end was that they didn't take more chances. But again, the positive from all of this, it did get nervy. They came through it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was far more positives from the Spurs game than the Liverpool one. To be honest, against Liverpool, despite them being an objectively better team right now, I still thought we were pretty poor. And the fact we couldn't lay a glove was concerning. But it was different against Tottenham, who are, of course, a worse side, especially defensively. And in the first half, yeah, Savinho in particular, obviously he had that one miss where Doku squared it to him and he hit it over the bar. But there was also one for me, and this is something that he's just going to have to refine himself, Savinho, because he's a young lad. But for some reason, sometimes for me, he doesn't pull the trigger quite quick enough. There was an instance...
It's his decision-making, in the first half, isn't it?
Yeah, there was an instance in the first half yesterday... where he fake shot it, and then the whole goal opened up and he had to just hit it either side of the keeper. And he did a second body feint, which then closed his angle and Archie Gray got in front of him again. And it's little things like that. If he adds that little bit of ruthlessness, because he gets in the right positions as a winger, then we'll be really, really looking good. I think Marmoush was understated yesterday. I think his pressing, like Pep said, has still
I was
going to
say, can we
done.
Can we just, while you're just on Marmoush, can we just shout out that turn that created the goal?
Yeah.
Fantastic, I mean, little turn.
He's really, really quick with the ball. And also, it's just, my dad made a comparison, which is really accurate and quite rare for my dad because he's usually miles off it. But the other week he said that...
all right.
He said that...
hope he's not listening.
He said that Marmoush reminds him a bit of Jamie Vardy in the sense that he makes very direct central runs.
Busy, but
that channel in between the right back and the centre back or the left back and the centre back, he's always penetrating those channels. And it's really good to play alongside Haaland because Haaland's always going to be that focal point. So it creates an awful lot of room. So in terms of the chance creating, yes, we needed to just... stick another one in the net. But you're right, David, the way that we rode out the storm, so to speak, for Ederson as well, that was the best half he's probably played all season, which can't be understated. So there was a lot of positives, and of course Kucherov as well is the main one of that for me, because he almost, don't like to say it because he played for United, but he reminds me a bit of Vidic, how he is in the tackle. He really does.
No prisoners taken.
No prisoners.
Let's talk about the new signings specifically then, because we had an email from KM who says, Kucherov is 20, came to a new country, league and club, barely understands English and had only played 69 professional games before joining City. In his first five games, he's faced Chelsea, Real Madrid, Newcastle and Liverpool. I'm really impressed by his talent and how he's handled himself in his short time here. And Higgy, there's an argument to say that out of all of the new signings, he's the one that settled in the best and has hit the ground running, really.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he hit the ground with his face, really. But from that point, it's almost to his benefit that he's made that ruck against Chelsea just to demonstrate his attitude in bouncing back, because without that, you'd just be like, well, yeah, he looks really solid, but it's like, oh my God, he did that and now he's doing this. It's like, it's even more testament to his character. But yeah, he looks very, very mature. I don't know how much they're all speaking to him. What language are they speaking to him in?
Well, did you not see Guardiola said after the game that he's speaking English and he just laughs?
Well, I've also never seen him laugh. I don't know how much of this is true. I mean, there's loads of photos of him and they all look like he's been carved out of granite in a bad mood. But apart from the one that's doing the rounds where he looks like AI. I don't know if that's him actually grinning and whether his lips are just blood red or just made another kill. But yeah, it's terrifying seeing him smile. That's maybe why he doesn't do it that often.
In terms of new signings though, Adam, best of the bunch so far. I mean, that's not, when I say best of the bunch, it sounds like I'm being critical of the others. I'm not. It just means that Kusunov has shone so far.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to apply the context. Like we just said, he speaks the language of football, let's say. It's a universal language. That's the one that he speaks so far. He's, you know, obviously come from Uzbekistan then to France. He's had, I don't think he travelled with the team to Madrid away. I might be wrong with that, but he had visa issues, I think. So he had to go through Greece on his own. So he's been like loads of little stop-start things for him so far. And you think about the start he's made. Yep, the Chelsea game, he demonstrated his resilience and strength of character. But then Leighton Orient, I don't think that can be understated, because he scored in that game and in many ways going to a lower league English side when it's freezing, early kickoff away, crowd close to the pitch. It's a bit of a baptism of fire for a young lad, that as well, in many senses. Then Newcastle, great side in transition. He was brilliant against them. Madrid, best side in transition on the planet, was our best player at the Bernabeu, in my opinion. And then great again against Tottenham. Again, one of the top three players on the pitch. At his age, not speaking the language, it's like he's so assured in his own ability that it doesn't even matter. So I think the good thing for us is, logically speaking, he's only going to get better when he learns the language and gets more familiar with the teammates and also plays some easier sides as well. So yeah, for me, he's made, I would actually go as far as saying it's the most impressive start to a centre-back's career at City I've seen since Laporte.
Would you be prepared to accept that he was trying to get out of the way of Rico Lewis's shot at Leighton Orient, though, and it just hit him? I don't know how, like, we can give him credit for a lot of things. Whether we're giving him credit for having got off the mark with his first goal, I'm not 100% sure.
They all count, David. If I scored that one against you, yeah, if I scored that one against you at fives, I'm claiming it. I'm not bothered.
Yeah, well, Higgy scored a back heel against me, so we'll not go into what's gone past me. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's not compare apples with oranges here. You're talking about a lucky goal and my back heel. That's not the same.
Are we not talking about the same? Because also there was no offside when you did that, so you could just stand on the goal line and do it.
I was marked, mate. Honestly, we're plunging into the depths of nonsense here. This is getting out of hand.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Get your ears around our bonus episodes every Monday. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
I think also a testament to Kusunov at Real Madrid and his attitude. You're going to get taken on and beaten at least once by Vinicius Jr. And that did happen. But again, he didn't let his head go down. He stuck at it. And yeah, he's just more impressive every time I see him.
Yeah. Yeah. Just on him as well, Chris, because obviously you think of previous City teams and what Guardiola has done with previous City teams. You think of that certainly the treble winning year, for instance, City were quite happy to have players run at them, and Diaz and Ake and Akanji were all kind of really strong and solid 1v1. It looks like Kusunov can be the next one to be really strong and solid 1v1, doesn't he? We laugh about him taking no prisoners, but he doesn't take any prisoners.
No, he doesn't. And I must admit, when he first came, looking at, you know, as you do, YouTube clips, and normally it's a case of, well, everyone looks great on YouTube, but he did look a little bit gung-ho. But he seems to be able, well, it's very early doors, isn't it? But he seems to be keeping a lid on that and being strong when necessary and not overdoing it. And yeah, you know, long may it continue.
One more nerdy point as well. We were the, before Kusunov signed, we were the worst side in the league this season for 50-50 duels won. And it was, that's a massive drop off from the previous league winning campaigns. And I think he was a top five player in Europe for 50-50 duels won. So I think that was the standalone stat why we brought him in. So it probably was the GBH that we saw in the YouTube compilations that tantalised Cheeky, so to speak.
Did you see the one on Salah? It was, Salah got through in the first half. It was still 0-0, and he came across the penalty area, and Kusunov was like, "I am either going to win this ball or you are going to lose your legs. That's how this is going to go down."
Yeah. And you need a bit of that. We don't, Zabaleta.
We don't foul like we used to. We used to not be afraid of taking a yellow card. Even the little niggly professional fouls, we don't seem to do anymore. But letting people know they're there, I know it's a bit old-fashioned and not really what Pep Ball is all about, but you need at least one person on your team that people are physically intimidated by and that they're scared to go near. Do you know what I mean? Like, put a bit of fear in people.
Yeah. Now, to finish the first part, I don't really want to spend too long on this because City won the game and I'm done with the whole do we like VAR or do we not like VAR discussion, because what's the point in that? It's here to stay. But let's outline exactly what happened at the end of that game. So, Haaland scored and then the referee, after a slight delay, and this didn't come through on the television, awarded a handball. The VAR checked for conclusive proof that the ball did not touch Haaland's hand or arm, and the screens in the stadium read checking disallowed goal handball. So it was the on-field decision was no goal. As Haaland and Danso came together, the video couldn't conclusively show that Haaland hadn't touched it with his arm, and so the on-field decision of no goal stood. If it was the other way round, if the goal had been given and the VAR was checking for the handball, they'd have seen the same evidence, found no conclusive evidence that the referee's decision was wrong, and awarded the goal. Higgy, it feels like we're entering this era of the idea of what you can prove and what you can't prove seems to be it seems to be a really simple thing. I would just have a look on the video, but then as the angles here have shown, there's no way of conclusively that the VAR can conclusively see whether Haaland has touched the ball or not with his hand off the angles that he's been shown or in the angles that he has available to him. So you're just going to end up with it in a situation where the referee makes a call and that call is just going to stand.
Well, it's just a mockery, isn't it? I mean, the starting point of this litany of bollocks is the referee giving handball from the position he was in, which is, you know, he's got about seven players all staggered, lined up in front of, between him and the actual incident. So you can't give handball because you've not seen it. Like, and why are we trying to not give goals? Like, it's ridiculous. They should be able to say, we've just had a look at it from every angle. We do know that the Spurs player handled it. We don't know that Haaland handled it. You should have given a goal. It is a goal.
But this is the thing, is that because of the way that we're trying to make VAR not very intrusive, what you've ended up with here is a system where the VAR can't say to the referee, I don't believe that has hit his arm, so I think you should award the goal. What he's got to say is, I don't know if that's hit his arm or not, so your decision has to stand.
Well, you do know that it's hit the Spurs player's arm, and like I say, it's bad refereeing initially because he's given handball when he shouldn't have. There was an incident in the first half where, was it, begins with B, Bentancur, was it, had a header off a corner, and he's headed it onto his own shoulder, and it's gone out for a goal kick, and the ref's given him, he's interpreted that as a City header. It's like, wait, you've not seen it hit a City head because it hasn't. So why have you given it? There's the starting point. I mean, just, you know, go back to refonomics college.
Ref school. Go back to ref school. Yeah. But Adam, when you think about what the entire point of the VAR is to correct incorrect decisions, you think about kind of what you can prove and what you can't prove. In this instance, I actually think it's all right for the referee on the field to give a handball there, because the proximity of the players and the way that the running, it is entirely possible that it could have hit Haaland's hand.
Yeah, it's possible, but you didn't see it.
I used to hear that on Sunday League all the time. I can't give what I can't see. Well, this guy has.
Yeah. But in this instance, he might believe that he's seen it and he's seen it wrong.
Yeah.
But then in this instance, the video can't prove that he has seen it wrong, which seems like a complete failure of the system, doesn't it?
It's a failure of the system, but I also probably think he awarded the handball because, and I genuinely mean this, he probably thought, there's no way Haaland's good enough to bundle his way through two bodies there. Big, gangly Norwegian. That's probably what he thought in the back of his head. Like, it's not the typical kind of goal Haaland even scores. So I don't think he even assumed that he was dexterous enough to pull that off.
You need some kind of common sense wild card where it's like, look, lads, we know the protocol, but this has actually happened. The bits you're talking about are irrelevant. This has happened. This has actually happened. It's fucking insane. The law is an ass.
But this is where we are, and this is the can of worms that's been opened with the video assistant referee, and it's not something that will go away quite quickly. And we'll keep seeing these incidents.
Yeah, I guess the thing is, it's still like, it's almost like VAR, rather than to get decisions right, it's there to protect the referee. That's what it feels like now. And it's for machine technology, you know, the way the world's going with AI and everything's being taken away from human control. This is a very inconclusive, laissez-faire piece of technology that's been implemented where it don't really change anything anyway. They're like, oh, well, yeah, there's nothing conclusive from that angle. So just leave it to the human who's made the decision on something that he didn't even see. So it needs refining. I think we're getting automated offsides next season. That'll be an improvement.
More robots, please.
I think part of the problem as well is the number of incidents where we see people just don't agree after having seen the video. We're spending too much time looking at football in a sense of this is right and this is wrong. And sometimes there is no right answer, and sometimes people will disagree. And what that means is that the video assistant can only disagree more with, you know, what's on the field. So
I presume you think it was a goal though yesterday.
I think it was a goal. Yeah, I think Haaland, I think it should have stood. But I also think in the instance, I can understand why the referee might think he's seen a handball, and I can also understand the protocol that says that they can't refer it to, they can't prove that he's wrong to say that, because the video cannot conclusively show all the way 360 around, and that right there is the problem. The VAR, I think the VAR should have the power to say, I think in all probability this hasn't touched his hand. I think you should award the goal.
I agree,
but that's
with that,
not what the that's not what the protocol is at the moment, so they can't do that.
Yeah,
I disagree with the terminology in that you can't say you understand why he thinks he's seen something that he's definitely not seen, because it definitely didn't happen. He might think it's happened, but he can't think he's seen it.
But that's the thing, is that the number of times where you believe you've seen something and you've seen something else, I can understand why that would be the case. There's bodies coming together. He could think that one of the Spurs players' arms that's touched it is Haaland's arm. It's it's very easy to do in that instance.
Yeah, in the heat of the moment, it is. I do agree with that, what you just said then, David, that it needs to be a protocol change. They need to be able to just... It's almost like these refs just haven't ever kicked a ball themselves.
Yeah.
That's what it is for me. It's just like they look at... Everything's too empirical. And
Are they sitting there going, oh, well, we know it's a penalty, but we know we can't give it because of the protocol we've got in place. Make a note in the margin, bring this up at the meeting for the next protocol change. I mean, are they in a position after the game where they think that was definitely, us, as in the system we're employing, has fucked up there? We acknowledge that it should have been a goal. Or are they like, we're following rule 1A, and are they just going to hang their hats on? Do we're doing the right thing? Or is there a recognition and an acknowledgement that they've robbed us of a perfectly good goal, or what? Do we get any feedback from that?
I don't know. I don't know.
By the way, I love the way that you started this segment by saying, I don't want to talk about it for VAR, lads.
We've done 10 minutes on it, yeah. So let's quickly move on to Plymouth, shall we? Attention turns to City's only realistic option for silverware this season. Now, the FA Cup's back on Saturday, and City host Liverpool's conquerors in Plymouth Argyle. It's been a while since the teams last met, with 36 years and 5 days separating this match with the last time they played. Much has changed since then. To get an idea of what we can expect on Saturday, I've been speaking to Aaron Hocking from the Argyle Life podcast.
After we beat Brentford, it was just a case of just get a good draw, and it doesn't get much better than, and sorry to say this, champions elect Liverpool at home. Although we have played them recently, we brought them back to Home Park after a draw at Anfield. We thought, you know, that's good enough. Like, you know, we're not going to win the FA Cup, so let's go out on a high. And to beat them, just phenomenal. Like, genuinely one of the best day supporting Plymouth Argyle Football Club I've ever had.
Yeah, what was it like in the ground? It must have been huge.
Sensational, and you instantly get people that are like, yeah, but you beat their kids. Yeah, so what? That's their fault for playing them. So whether you do the similar, we'll find out. I can't see it, but yeah, we incredible day, incredible draw, incredible result. But I did predict it. I did predict a 1-0 win. So. And there's proof. There's plenty of proof out there. I did it on basically every Liverpool podcast you can find. I did it on our own podcast. I did it on Pie Faces vlog. I did it everywhere. I said 1-0, Argyle win. And stupidly, I put money on it, but I stupidly put a goal scorer as well instead of just going for the standard 1-0. I got too greedy with it and I got that wrong. So, yeah, that money could have come in handy at the moment. But
yeah. Let's talk about this upcoming game because, okay, you're not champions to let Liverpool out, and you get current champion City. What's the reaction to that?
Yeah, phenomenal. I actually tweeted after we beat Liverpool, I said, oh, all of this just to lose to Cardiff in the next round, which would have been horrendous. But yeah, it doesn't get better. I think apart from your neighbours over the road, United away. Or maybe Villa Park doesn't get a better draw. And also, there's nothing better because a Pep. Well, it's not really an argument that the best manager in the game ever, in my opinion, to go up against him whilst he's going for a bit of a dip in form. Is he going to overthink this? Is he going to have one of those galaxy brain moments? Can we do it? Don't think we can, but there's no better time to find out, is there?
Well, I was going to say, like, you've knocked Liverpool out. You've knocked, like, Brentford in the round before that out. Like, do you... It's not impossible that you come to the Etihad and it could be normal time, could be extra time, could be on penalties, but it's not out of the question.
No, exactly. And we're under a bit of a resurgence under Miron Muzlic. We've only lost one in the last seven, and that includes FA Cup games, so... That's phenomenal in itself. We're no longer bottom of the league like we were when we played Brentford. We're no longer second bottom of the league like we were when we played Liverpool. We're now, I believe, after tonight's results, I'm not sure, I need to check that actually, we're third bottom. So, you know, beat City, stay up, win the FA Cup. Good season, that. but yeah, just... it's not unfeasible, but I think just it being at the Etihad means that you're going to have far better options off the bench than what Liverpool did down at our place. So, yeah, it might be a Leighton Orient situation in which we go 1-0 up and then, you know, on comes Erling and whoever else. your big guns and, you know, it finishes 3-4-1. But I'll take that because that's a good way to bow out.
Yeah. Well, before we get into that game specifically, let's look at the resurgence because, as you say, you are third bottom now as we're talking. Okay. 3 points behind Hull. How are you feeling about this season now?
Yeah, it's a weird one. It's a weird one because we all wrote it off. You hire Wayne Rooney as apparently not a PR stunt, which you have to give the board some credit because previous decision making has gone well. Maybe not the last couple of managers, but you know, overall they've taken us from League Two back to the Championship, so you've got to trust them somewhat. But hiring Wayne Rooney was just an instant, you know, we're gonna go down, but whatever happens, we'll enjoy it. and we didn't enjoy it. We got battered. So now we've got Miron Muzlic. Not many people will know of him. I think more people will know of him now after the Liverpool game, in which he was featured in a Guardian article, in which he spoke about fleeing war-torn Bosnia when he was a child, and you know, and understanding life and football isn't life, and other things go on around that, and it's just a privilege to be a manager of Plymouth Argyle, which we don't hear that often. And all of a sudden we're sort of starting to believe that we could do this. We could have a great escape out of the bottom three in the Championship, but I think it might be a little bit too late. A little too late. Yeah, words. Yeah, I think had we hired him earlier, or had we hired him at the start of the season, things would be a lot different. But it's one of those now. It's just like from now until the end of the season is a complete free hit, really, and we're just enjoying it whilst we can.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
And obviously enjoying it would involve a trip to the Etihad. So what does enjoying that game look like?
Well, like I said, if we can just get a goal, ideally the first one, so it gives us a little bit of belief before you crush our soul, that would be great. We are famously terrible on the road. We have not won a game away from home in the league, apart from Brentford. I don't know how we beat a team with the best home record in Europe away from home. I still, and their squad is pretty strong as well. I still don't really understand it. But we have not won a game away from home in the league since April. Before that, I think it was February when we went up to Middlesbrough. So we only won three games away from home in all competitions last season. We're yet to win away from home in the league this year. So just scoring away from home is a huge thing for us. If we can do that up at the Etihad, that is a success. No matter who's in goal, even if it's, I don't even know, your fourth, fifth, if it's Scott Carson in goal, don't care. That's a success. So like I said, if we can go 1-0 up and we have a good day out, that's enjoying it for us. But I don't want to sound like too defeatist, because I can imagine, like, you know, it's a pat on the head sort of game where City fans are like, it's only Plymouth. Like, we had it with Liverpool, right? They didn't expect us to be anything special. And when we lost to them, it was, oh yeah, you only beat our kids, well done. And now they're on some sort of like Argyle hate watch on Twitter. Like, every game, they're instantly in the club, the official accounts comment sections. But I think it'll be incredibly interesting to see how it pans out, but I don't want to write this game off, but we've got bigger fish to fry in the fact that we now have Hull City on the Tuesday afterwards. That's huge. That's a bigger game for us, in truth.
The thing is as well, like as you said before, you can only beat the team that's put out in front of you. And if Liverpool decide to take the risk of playing the younger players, then that's risk they take. I don't know what City will do this weekend. City's form has been hit and miss for the last few months. There's a strong chance that Guardiola goes fairly strong with his with his team selection, because there isn't a midweek game for City after this one.
This is basically the only thing you've got left to win as well, right?
Yeah, and that's the other side of things. So that I suspect he'll go maybe stronger than he might otherwise have done. But I mean, I guess that's the other side of it as well. You kind of want to play City like with the you want City to put the best team out that they can and have a chance of beating them, I guess.
Yeah. Because I suppose the other side to that argument is that you could play your full strength team, but it's whether they underestimate us. It's not whether Pep underestimates us. It's whether players and, you know, these are third bottom. These are in the relegation zone in the championship, lads. Like, this should be a walker. This should be a morale booster. And if it isn't, then, you know, then you're screwed. What do you do off the bench then? So it's a case of, I would hate to be a manager trying to work out what my team is for this, because, like I said, if you do a slot where it's too soft, it's your fault. You can go too strong. If you get beaten, that's your morale crushed, and, you know, nothing won this season. So, but yeah, I mean, that's the worst problems to have, I suppose, in my opinion.
Definitely.
But, yeah, like when you get the draw, you want to see your best players out on that pitch, don't you? Like it was a bit of a shame, really. Like, you know, Liverpool played Diaz, Chiesa, and Jota up top, which was great, but all three of them were terrible. So, like, you almost want to see the best of the best up against little old Argyle. And, you know, we played Chelsea not that long ago, two seasons ago, when we were in League One, in the FA Cup, and they played full strength. Bar, I think the only player that didn't play full strength was Aspilicueta, who was still their club captain. So, you know, incredible. And we took the lead against them, and that was one of our best away games that I've had following this club. So just to make the miles worth it. Is all that we ask, really.
Yeah. Who is playing well for you at the moment? You talked about the resurgence. Who's leading that charge?
Well, the problem is a few of our best players are sort of sidelined at the moment. Ryan Hardy's had a bit of a resurgence in form. We have two new centre-backs in. Maxi Talavirev, who's a Ukrainian international. We signed him from LASK from the Austrian Bundesliga.
Was he the fella that swore on TV after the game?
No, that's Nikola Katic. So he's the other hard, I don't know if I can swear on this, but he's the other hard bastard that we've brought in.
He seems great fun.
Yeah, we've just sort of like signed some muscle, and it's great to see, because it's solidified us massively. So we've got Timothy. There's a bit of a debate on how we say his last name. Apparently it's Puhach. I don't believe that. It can't be that. But he's our new left back that we've signed on loan from Holstein Kiel, one of those. He's decent. And then, yeah, it's just like, individually, there's no chance that you've heard of any of our players. And there's no chance that they would. I don't think there's many that would get into any other championship team, really. And that explains why we're bottom three. But they collectively seem to have it going on. So doesn't really answer your question as to individuals to look at. I suppose Maxi would be the one, because he looks similar to Erling in the fact that he's got a top knot, and that's about it, really. Very plain skinned. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Aaron, you said you were correct about the Liverpool prediction. We have a charity bet coming up a bit later on. So let's see if you can win us some money. What's your score prediction for this one? What are you going for?
Yeah, I'm going for a 3-1 City here. I'd love to turn around and say 1-0 Argyle. I'd love that. I'd say 3-1 City. We score first. You know, little bit of panic. Maybe you chuck one or two of the big boys on and get the job done. So similar to the Orient result. How did that finish? 2-1.
2-1. Yeah.
Similar to that, but just because you're at home, slightly stronger squad from the start, slightly stronger bench, and I'd like to think that we were slightly stronger than Leighton Orient as well, but who knows? Soon find out.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Aaron Hocking from the Argyle Life podcast. And Adam, this could be a bit of a tricky one. Even though the context is Plymouth are down the bottom of the championship, they've knocked out a full-strength Brentford at the Brentford Community Stadium in the third round. They've then knocked out a admittedly fairly heavily rotated Liverpool side at Home Park. You feel like City shouldn't take this one lightly.
They shouldn't. Pep don't take any games lightly. How many times have we seen us play a low league opposition in any cup and Pep goes full strength? It's been happening for years.
Burton's my favourite, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the one that showed lack of respect.
Yeah.
What was it? Was it Nick Harris who tweeted that or something? That's one of the best tweets ever.
Did it make 10 or was it 9? I can't remember. It was ridiculously high.
It was 9. Look, I think, you have to show any opposition respect. Pep always does. I watched the Plymouth-Liverpool game. I thought that Plymouth's two new centre-backs were very, very, very impressive. Particularly in aerial duels. We'll give Haaland, if he starts, which I assume he will, a good run around. And their goalkeeper's good as well, that Hazard in net as well, if that's how you say it, or Hazard because he's English. But we should win. Let's not show them too much respect. We're still Man City, we should go full strength. And I think we will win as well, because like you just said at the start, this is our only realistic chance of silverware. And I'm telling you, Pep's leaving this season with something.
Yeah. What sort of team then would you like to see, Higgy? Because, as I say, he's obviously, Guardiola takes these games seriously. He's obviously not going to go so weak that it risks an upset in the way that Liverpool did. But at the same time, you go too strong and the fringe players don't get their chances and you risk injuries for later down the line. So I'm thinking, with a mix of younger players, you players like Simpson, Pusey, O'Reilly, Mubama, who did well against Salford, for instance, a mix of the newer players, Marmoush, Kusunov, Nico Gonzalez, settling in quite nicely. Maybe Vitor Reich, who came in for a bit of the Leighton Orient game. And then you've got the likes of Grealish and McAtee, who are senior players, not getting too many minutes. So, what do you want to see from this team?
Well, apart from a win, I'd like to see Grealo start, as I believe he's known on the streets. McAtee, again, I think he's been quite encouraging in the cameos he's been afforded thus far, and he deserves his chance given the circumstances under which he's kind of been convinced to stay. You'd imagine if he didn't start in this game or playing a big part in it, then it's a bit of a blag, in it, why is he here? I don't know about Reish, still baffled by how to pronounce that. I don't know about starting him. I don't think we should go too many changes. Maybe bring him on later on if we've wrapped things up or it's looking a bit more secure, because we really do need the win. It's the only chance of silverware we've realistically got. It's going to be really good for momentum, morale. Definitely, I would like to see Marmoush and Gonzalez start as well.
Keep them in the flow of things, yeah.
Yeah, just to continue the education and indoctrination and Pep brainwashing. Same goes for Kushinov. Pretty much full strength, but I'd like to see Grealish and McAtee involved.
McAtee's started every FA Cup game this season so far. He started both Salford and Leighton Orient, so there's a good chance he'll be in there.
Yeah, and I don't think he was great, was he, against Leighton Orient? Not easy circumstances, but home game should be a bit easier. It's hard to find your rhythm, isn't it, when you're not starting many games and he's obviously going to be feeling not hugely secure about his employment at the club, and hopefully this scenario, even factoring all that in, being at home against a lower league team, it should be a good atmosphere. Most of the crowd will be probably fairly well oiled by that point on a Saturday afternoon, so it should be a good atmosphere under the lights, and hopefully McAtee and the rest of them can put in a good performance and put Plymouth to the sword, even though, as you rightly say, they are the conquerors of the champions elect.
Yeah. Adam, I'm just praying that Guardiola picks Nico O'Reilly, Nico Gonzalez and Rico Lewis, just to make it a commentator's nightmare. It'd be like when Sven Ednery Castillo and Felipe Caicedo in the same team. Every time they pass to each other, nobody could say it. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think there is a chance O'Reilly starts, but I think you can usually tell with Pep, based on the subs bench, who's going to come in. So I think Gundogan starts, Bernardo, Foden, probably McAtee, 50-50 on McAtee. I think Ake comes back in. Vardiol needing a rest is paramount for me. I think he's the main player who's just been overplayed. So I'd definitely be putting Ake back in. And also, Kev didn't start yesterday as well, so maybe he lets Kev rip against lower league opposition. But
I was going to ask it, because since you've mentioned him, The thing with De Bruyne is, I think it's maybe it's clear now that City have to pick and choose his games. Yeah. He's obviously coming towards the end of his time at City. Whether he does get a contract extension or not, we don't know. But there's only going to be limited chances for him to light the Etihad up again. And it kind of feels like he deserves a few more of those moments before he leaves. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. Well, I think the club, it was reported yesterday, and I think it just makes perfect sense. They're letting him decide his own future, whether he wants to stay or not. And look, I look back to the summer of 2019. Fernandinho, at that time, was the same age as De Bruyne is now. And the club realised, this guy's getting older. He's our starting number six. We should probably sign someone to supplement him now and make it a seamless transition. So we brought in Rodri. Why can't we just do the same in this instance now? Like, we can play Kev 40, 50% of the games this season, and it doesn't always have to be in high octane physical games like Madrid away anymore. It can be when we become a side again that can dominate with the ball and control games, which we've not been for months, and I still don't think we're there by any stretch of the imagination. When we become that cohesive unit again that has 60, 70% of the ball, even against the likes of Chelsea and teams like that, which we were at one point, then De Bruyne can come back in seamlessly. Honestly, like, his quality, his technique has not dropped off whatsoever. So I personally, I'd want him to stay for at least another year and use him sparingly, because in terms of footballing quality, he still has the most in our side by a country mile. So it would just be silly, I think, to get rid of him. So I would definitely give him a run out against Plymouth. Grealish, I'm not too fussed about, because I just think he's pretty impotent against any side now. And I think Pep thinks that too.
It feels like the ship has sailed, doesn't it?
Yeah, massively. I'm just not enthused by him being on the pitch anymore, to be honest. I'd rather just... given how well Doku's played in the last couple of games, or how lively he's looked, I think giving Doku a run of games now could be really beneficial, because he's been quite injury-prone and stop-start so far this season. So I'd actually probably just continue with Doku on the left just for that continuity, and letting him get a feel of, you know, he might get a couple of goals against Plymouth. That'd be good for him. So, yeah, I think he'll go very strong, and I think we'll win comprehensively regardless.
Yeah. Full week after this one as well, Higgy, before the next game, which is Forest away. Perhaps not any real reason to do any juggling, particularly with the team. It is Forest away. They drew with Arsenal at the City Ground last night, 0-0, and Forest are now only a point ahead of City. So it's real tight in the race for what I think is probably going to be top five this season. You can't take your eyes off that, but that full week gives you such good leeway, doesn't it?
It does, and credit to Forest, you know, they're the real deal, aren't they, this season? They've proved it consistently thus far, that they're not messing around. It's not a fluke. They are very well organised. I say it's not a fluke. Some of the things that Chris Wood's been doing, I wouldn't expect him to be doing every season. It's just like, yeah, you are having a bit of a patch. I suppose if we beat, you know, you've got to end up where you deserve, don't you? So if we deserve to finish above Forest, then we go there and win.
No, all I'm saying is that with the Plymouth game as well, the way to manage the end of the season, they're out of the Champions League, there are no more midweek games for that to come up. The squad management gets a bit easier from here on in,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, no, true. And I just don't want to let that Grealish point drop quite dead. I would definitely start Doku on the wing over Grealish, but I just think that he has proved how valuable he can be, and he's also, when he's been played in, I've said this last time I was on, when he's played in the middle the last few times, he's looked good. So I just don't think, I think there's life in the old calves yet.
Just needs to be available though, doesn't he? Let's say he's not been available.
Well, I suppose you could say that about John Stones, but that's been done to death on it. I don't want to go over too much old ground.
Adam, you can't win everything every season. A drop-off was probably inevitable after four in a row, but the extent to which City dropped off may be a little bit more alarming than we thought it would be. But should City win the FA Cup, get back into the top four or five this season, would that appease the awful form before Christmas?
It would appease the fans, yeah. Pepe get another hit at it. Well, he will anyway, even if he finishes 10th from here on. Yeah.
Liverpool, you know, Chelsea, Arsenal are all out. Forest, the only team above City, still in.
Look, yeah, absolutely. I think like Villa and Newcastle are the threats that are still in the competition. Yeah. I will not say United because I actually think Fulham will win at Old Trafford, genuinely.
Entirely possible, yeah. Newcastle and Brighton play each other as well, so that's a good one.
That's a good one for us as well. So I'm just looking at, I think once you get to the semis and the games are at Wembley, the 50-50, we'll have a much bigger chance against Villa and Newcastle. I don't want to go to Villa Park. I don't want to go to St James's.
Yeah.
If we can avoid those two games, I think we'll win it.
Yeah. Do you think we'd beat United if we got them in the final?
Not third year running, goodness
God,
mate.
Third year. I mean, we should have beat them last time, shouldn't we, if the players weren't pissed. And I don't think they've got any reason to be pissed this time. So
should have been the last time we played them, but there we are.
Yeah,
there's plenty of opportunities to do something stupid against United still this season. We've had no wins on the charity bet this week, so the total for the season remains at £1,115. We're collecting for the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. They'll be outside the Etihad in the usual spot under the bridge near Asda up until about 5:15 on Saturday. William Hill has given us 3 £10 correct score singles to try and win some more money for them. We will start with you, Chris Higginbottom. What are you having for this one?
I think City are going to win 3-0.
3-0. Solid 3-0. It's 5-1 and 50 quid, if you're right. We heard that Aaron has gone for a 3-1 City win. That's 11-1 and £110 if he's right. Adam, what are you having, mate?
7-0.
Do you want to go any further into what you said around that?
That was just hilarious the way you said that.
I said, I just typed that without any critical thinking, kind of like when the shopkeeper asks you if you want a receipt and just a word comes out. Well, firm 7-0. Yeah, it's just a hunch. So, yeah. The goals will flow.
Do you always ask for it? Do you get a receipt usually? Or?
I don't. It's 50-50. Just a word comes out of my mouth. I go yes or no. And then if I get it, I scrunch it up and throw it in a bin. So I've never, if I'm just in a shop and they go, do you want a receipt?
Claiming that milk on expenses, are you?
Usually not, David. But I never really consciously think about the answer. But the word that comes out most is no.
Yeah. Do you ever, Higgy, when they ask you for your email address, do you ever say, actually, no, can I have a paper receipt, please? I don't want to give you my data.
They never ask.
Do they? Who's not? They that? Plenty of shops you go in, they say, oh, can we just take your email for the receipt? We'll email the receipt to you.
And I'm like, outlets. I was still in the corner shop scene. Sorry.
Oh, no. Yeah. Does anyone get a receipt from a corner shop? I don't know. Do they even offer it these days? I don't know.
I'm not sure they ever have.
Where did I get that from? We weren't even in a corner shop, were we?
It's usually places like Decathlon and stuff that are like, oh yeah, give you email. We'll,
can I email you some spam?
It's like, no, I don't want you to have my data. Just I'll take a paper receipt, please. Thank you very much. Anyway, Adam's 7-0 is 28-1 and 280 quid if he's right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on how to gamble responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast. You've made it this far, so don't give up now.
Now then, in 1999, Joe Royle decided he needed to add some more firepower to City's attack. He turned to the Gillingham striker who, the year before, scored at Wembley and nearly helped to keep City in Division 2. Robert Taylor didn't get promotion with the Kent side that year, but he did help City get back to the Premier League the year after. I've been getting his memories of his time at Main Road, starting with what he was thinking at 2-0 in that playoff final.
I don't know, really, because I mean, it's, you're in the game, you don't think about the outcome, really, you just want to do your best. And hopefully, I mean, like you say, we went 2-0 up, and some of the boys, I think, were saying, oh, we've done it or whatever, but in anything could happen. Because I think, because Man United scored a late goal, didn't they, in the European Cup, whether it was Champions League or whatever it is called then, a late goal that the week before. And sort of like, and you think yourself, and you go back to halfway line, you kick off, and then, you know, Man City then sort of like got on top of the game and started creating chances, and then we changed our players and we brought another defender on, and I think, and then we took off Carlos Saba off, and then the fullbacks were pushing on, and there's no one to sort of like split and help me out up front, really, and they just got on top of the game, and I thought, myself, God, this is going to go a bit funny, really. They got the goal and panic set in, sort of thing, really, in the team, and you know, after a good performance for 80, 90 minutes, whatever it is, you know, we went down the Swanee River, really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is it then difficult that the following season, obviously, City go on to win on penalties, get promoted. Mm. The following season, then, when City come in to try and sign you, is that like was that a weird feeling for you?
It was. I mean, there's quite a lot of clubs, you know, sort of like there was a lot of clubs ringing up and making inquiries for me. At the time, I was travelling down to Portsmouth to speak to Tony Pulis at Portsmouth, and then I was getting in the car and driving back, and I had Hearts on the phone and had Spurs on the phone as well. David Pleat was on the phone because George Graham was manager at the time, and they put a bid in for me. And it was just like, because City had been like after me for a little while, they put 3 or 4 bids in beforehand. And so I thought, out of my feeling is they wanted me more than everybody else, sort of thing. They wanted me beforehand, and I just felt a bit loyal to that, to go with that. And I spoke with Joe and that, and you know, that was great. But I mean, I was sitting at home on the Sunday, and I was having my roast dinner on a Sunday, and I get a call from Gillingham chairman, Paul Scally, turned around and said to me, Joe Rawls ringing in a minute, we've just sold you to Man City. So I went, oh, right, okay. So about 10, 15 minutes later, Joe rang me up and said, hiya, how do you feel being, you haven't signed yet, but how do you feel being a Man City player? I went, oh, great, brilliant, thanks very much. And then he said, right, get in the car and drive up, sort of thing. So I had to sort of like get in the car and drive up on the Monday morning, and then it just all happened so quickly. So, you know, from being at Wembley, nearly winning the Wembley playoff final and going up ourselves, and you join the club, sort of like the season after, you were wanting to go up themselves to the Premier League. It's just really surreal, really weird feeling.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously you're having those conversations with Joe Royal. What was he saying about what he wanted to achieve that season? Because obviously the City had started the season quite well. Obviously looking for a little bit more firepower to add some more goals to the team.
Yeah.
What were those conversations about?
Well, no, he just said to me, you know, you remind me of me when I played, sort of thing, and you know, and just wanted me to come along and enjoy my football and be part of it, and he knows what I could do as a player and this kind of thing. But in my mind, myself, I'm going to a big club, and in my mind, I didn't think I was good enough to make the step up. I didn't think, and that's all I thought to myself. I wasn't good enough. Everyone's better than me. That's what I thought about my whole career. You know, I was just a person just enjoying playing the football. I wasn't like, you know, a big time Charlie as such. I just thought to myself, I wasn't good enough to be around these players. And, you know, and all credit Joe, he played me the games, and that some games I played all right, and some games I was a bit scared in, sort of thing. I used to get frightened before games when I'm playing big games. You know, you walk out of Main Road and it's like, you know, massive stadium there at the time. You know, you're going from little old Gillingham and Brentford's grounds and that, Leighton Orient's grounds up to Man City, and it's a big thing to step up. And plus, I was leaving my house on a Monday morning because I was living in Kent still, travelling up at 5 a.m. to go training on a Monday and then staying in the hotel all the time. So that wasn't very good away from my family either at the time. So that was all to, you know, you miss your family, you miss your family life, you miss them being with you. And you spend a couple of months in a hotel on your own, and it's not a very nice feeling. You've got to try and come get across that bridge as well as trying to perform in front of supporters, you know, who pay their money to come and watch you and expect you to perform every week. And it was just really hard. So, yeah, until I found somewhere, I had to rent for a bit as well, and then, you know, found somewhere to live.
Throughout that season, you scored a few quite key goals for City. I'm thinking kind of like Forest, Palace, Portsmouth, all away from home.
What
were those games like? Because City, the many of those games, it felt like City really had to work to get the points. And then, you know, you pop up with a goal. It must feel quite rewarding to be kind of chipping in with these sorts of goals.
Yeah, I mean, the boys worked hard. You know, they're the team that worked for each other, and that's the main thing. Same thing at Gillingham, the boys worked for each other, and they had a great tight-knit group there as well. And you can see on a Saturday afternoon, game night, game day, they stick with each other, they fight for each other, they go through brick walls for each other, and if somebody ain't playing well, they G you up to get you through the game. And, you know, I remember the goal at Forest, that was a good performance from us that day. I remember the one at Portsmouth as well, and you know, and I remember the most important one was the Birmingham one at home on the Friday night. And I just felt so much relief that I helped the team to a point where they could get promoted. I was just so happy that I was able to help the club in some shape or form to pay back some of the money they paid for me. And I think that goal did.
Yeah, let's talk about that Birmingham game, because obviously the Friday night is a weird one as well, because obviously Ipswich are away at Charlton the next day. If they drop points and City have won, then it's over. City are promoted. Did that add the pressure to the team before the game? Did you feel the pressure before the game on that one?
Yeah, we did, because it's the last home game of the season. But you can see the passion for it, to go out there and perform and just fight for something. You know, it doesn't matter how you play in games of football, as long as you come out winners and you showed passion. You know, supporters want to see passion from players and the willingness to win. If you go down and lose 1-0, but you show the passion and that, then they're happy. But, you know, we had it all that night. I thought that was a good team performance, as in we battled and played some good football as well. It's a meant-to-win stuff, and we deserve to win that night. But yeah, it's the last home game, full house at Main Road. It was just a great, great night and great atmosphere at the end.
Yeah, do you remember the goal? Can you still picture it?
Yeah, I remember it was free kicked. Kevin Horlocks clipped it in, and I think Richard Jobson, I think, headed it back down, and it just managed to land to me, and I put it back the other side where the keeper was coming across, put it back the other way. Just a relief. I was so happy it went in. And we managed to hold on.
Yeah, so then we get to Ewood Park. You're in the starting lineup for that one. You've already talked a little bit about kind of feeling pressure, feeling nerves. How was that one?
Yeah, I remember it being a hot day. I remember that. That was a very hot day. It was just a nervy day, you know, being in that high-pressure environment. I've never been in that, apart from Wembley, but it's like we weren't meant to win at Wembley. You know, we were the underdogs and City was supposed to come there and beat us 3-0 or 4-0. Everyone was talking about it and that, when we're no hopers and this kind of thing. But on that day, we were the favourites to win the game. So it was a bit of a, for me, it was a bit of a nervy time for during the game. Do you want to make a mistake? You don't want to make a bad pass? You don't want to, you know, make anything go wrong? You're the one that cost the team promotion to the Premiership. And that's how you feel. And if it comes with experience playing at that level. And if you played, you know, a couple more years, whatever, you'd have been better and better at it and cope with it a bit better than you did that day.
Yeah, you moved to Wolves that summer. How did that move come about? What was the situation there?
I started pre-season and I was flying pre-season. Even George Weir came along. I was playing with him and that as well. It was amazing. I was playing really well, scoring goals. I felt the fittest I've felt. And then my ex-wife turned around and said she wasn't happy up north. So I went in to see Joe all about it, and he said, that's fine. He goes, if we get an offer for you, he said, family comes first, you get an offer for you, you know, I don't want you to go because you're doing really well and all that kind of thing, but family's more important than football. So within about a couple of hours after we having a chat, there's a few clubs phoned up about signing me, and the nearest one, sort of near to where we were, come back down south, was Wolves. I went and spoke to them, signed for them, and hated it every minute of it. I got injuries and had operations. You know, my gallbladder removed, had operations on both my calves. And then I was out for, I was a little tear of my Achilles. It's just one thing after another, and I had to retire in the end. I would have loved to have stayed and just showed everybody else what I could do, what I have been doing in the games I've played for my other clubs and that, scoring goals and playing really well. It took me time to settle in at Gillingham as well. It took me about 8 or 9 games to settle in there to start scoring goals. And after that, I scored loads of goals for them and got player of the year the season and everything. I just wanted to show, you know, Man City fans what I could do. And it's a shame that I couldn't do it that year because I was fit and raring to go and I was just happy to be there.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
That was Robert Taylor speaking to me about his time at City. You can hear the full version of that interview on our Patreon feed now. Just head over to patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast if you want to sign up. Time to finish with a very quick listener question. This has come in from Luke on Blue Sky. You can get in touch on Blue Sky or you can just search for us on socials at Blue Moon Podcast is the usual way to do it. You can email contact@bluemoonpodcast.com as well, or you can fill in the form on the website. Plenty of ways to get in touch. Luke says, if every player at City had a fight, who would win? And I've decided to split this up a little bit into different eras. So, Adam, the current team, who would win if they all decided, you know what, we're going to go hell for leather at each other here? Who's winning that fight?
Oh, see, there's the physically imposing lads, but then it's strength of character as well. Kucinov's come to mind straight away, but maybe, just given he's like 10 years older, he's tall as well. Edison would be my answer, actually. Now I've thought about it. Yeah, just he's a bit unhinged. He'd maybe do the whole Mike Tyson bite your ear gimmick as well. Like, it won't just be a clean fight with Edison. So I'll go with Edison.
Not a bad shout. Not a bad shout.
When Edison got kicked in the face by Sadio Mane, which I still don't think we've cleared up is whether it's a red card or not. Did he play the next game?
Yes, flying all the way with a check helmet on. Yeah, he probably, that's what I mean though, he's such a weird guy that he probably, in a weird perverse way, enjoyed that boot to the face so early on in his City career. It set the tone very well for him.
Yeah, yeah. Higgy, you were nodding along as Kucinov was mentioned there, but maybe you've been swayed by Edison, I don't know.
No, I mean, it's cushion off all the way for me. I think we talk about physicality and character. He looks like he'd just snap your bones and drink the marrow without even blinking, with his heart rate going up above 85.
Yeah. How about for the entire Guardiola era? Does anybody that Guardiola has managed? Is there anybody that Guardiola has managed during his time here that could take him on, or is it still cushion off for you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say, isn't it? Because I've never seen any of them actually get into any kind of ruckus. I mean,
Fernandinho liked to fight.
Yeah, that's true, but it's fairly sort of,
I
fairly
think company,
slightly
company
built.
Could hold
company,
own.
Yeah, company is one. You wouldn't want to take headbutt off him, would you?
Absolutely not.
He had players bouncing off him when he was just running. I'm sure he'd be a bit of a handful.
General Giant. I always thought Yaya was a bit of a gentle giant, though.
Well, it's hard to say. You look at the the physical attributes of someone. You don't really know how they're going to perform in this theoretical brawl. I mean, are weapons allowed?
I don't know. I hadn't thought of that, because who's cunning enough to what? Like, who takes the most cunning weapon? Is that what you suggest?
Well, you just don't know, do you? Well, that's possibly. Oh, what's that over there? Stabbed. Yaya might, cake in the face and then break your ribs. Did Zabaleta play under Pep?
He did.
I think Zabaleta is like, he's one of those where you think he's beaten because he's, a bloodied pulp of crunched bones on the floor. He'd just get up and carry on like some kind of Terminator.
Yeah, I think, didn't Pep also manage Fernando? He was quite tough. The octopus.
Yeah, he'd have some reach, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Maybe he's a shout.
We're about going back to all time, Adam, and I appreciate we can't comment on players that were, back in the day, but you kind of expand it a bit further. You can take in players like Nigel de Jong, maybe?
You want me to say Andy Morrison?
Yeah.
I can't really go further back than that, David. Andy Morrison? That's probably the best about to where how old I am.
we should give honourable mentions, and these are obviously before my time, but honourable mentions to Bert Trautman, who was a former paratrooper, probably killed people, and obviously played with a broken neck in a winning cup final side. Big Dave Watson, he was apparently
I was going to say Dave Watson, always people always the documentary that we talked about with his daughter a few months ago with about his dementia, they always talked to all the people that she interviewed for it were talking about how he just stuck his head in everywhere.
And Mike Doyle, there's footage of him, you know, in that Dennis Law back heel derby, when the crowd invaded the pitch trying to get it stopped. Mike Doyle's just confidently striding towards the dugout, and like no United fan went anywhere near swinging distance. So that's got to be one. I would also say, De Jong, apparently he was a bit of a kickboxer, and that's not just an ironic comment on his Xabi Alonso.
World Cup final, Euros final, can't remember.
I think so, yeah. Tiato was pretty nails. I think worthy of mention also.
Tiato, actually, I'd forgotten. On last week's show, there was the interview where he said about the Norwich red card. And he was like, I have swung for him, but I didn't connect with him.
Yeah, the intent was there, but unfortunately, I didn't break his face. I think honourable mention to Steve Lomas as well for being famously one of the semi-hardest. I don't know if you remember that. He scored a goal, I think it was against West Ham, and looked particularly aroused by it.
I don't remember it, but I do remember the story. If we have missed anybody that is that you think will be good in a City fight, hard man. Oh, we've got another one.
Steve McMahon. He looked like someone's dad out of This Is England who'd served in the Falklands and killed people with his bare hands and possibly bayonets.
Yeah. Also, you've just reminded me with the phrase bare hands, one of my favourite stories of somebody, I won't say who it was, but caused an almost international incident going through an airport when asked the question, are you carrying any dangerous weapons with you? And he replied, only my bare hands.
That's an amazing answer.
Which doesn't help you get through security that quickly, but there we go. If we've missed any City hard men, then get in touch. contact@bloomingpodcast.com. You can find us on socials to search for Blooming Podcast. But that is it for today's show. Thank you very much to my guests for this one. Adam Monk.
Pleasure, thanks for having me.
And Chris Higginbottom.
Thanks for having me also. Pleasure.
Don't forget, there is a nostalgia episode out every Monday too. This week's was Kieran Murray inducting Martin Demichelis into the Cult Hero Hall of Fame. It's available now on Patreon, and there's a clip coming up shortly. If you want the full thing, then head over to patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. I'll be back next week to preview the match with Forest. I'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
I think, if you've got noticeable hair, mistakes will stick out a lot more. So Demichelis strutting about with a ponytail, everything he did, just like, I spotted that. He's clumsy, he's slow, because you can spot him a mile off.
You get Wigan in the FA Cup at the Etihad, and he's playing a rotated team. But obviously, Demichelis is suspended for the second leg, so he's one of the few first-teamers that starts that game. So he clumsily gives away a penalty to Wigan to open the scoring.
Do you know when you do something wrong and you promise that you'll never do it again?
Yeah.
And then accidentally, you do it again. My granny used to go nuts at us because for some reason, we were so nervous around her. We used to spill her tea all the time. So one time she said, promise me you won't spill this cup of tea. So I was trying to get in to the table, sort of move the chair. But the tablecloth was one of those like almost plasticky, big, stiff tablecloths. So as I went to get in, my knee shot up and moved the tablecloth up, which then spilled the tea all over the place. Oh, she went mental. But like, it was because I was trying to be so careful. I was overthinking the not doing it that led to the mistake. So I think that's maybe what happened to Demichelis this night.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.
Psst.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.